You are listening to the Otherworldly Oracle official podcast, a Burning Hallows production. We are your otherworldly hosts, Alora Rain and
Kitty Fields.
If you like what you're hearing, hit the subscribe button for notifications of future weekly episodes. Head on over to patreon.com/burninghallows to grab your exclusive Book of Shadows pages to go along with each episode. Pay a visit to the Otherworldly Market at otherworldlyoracle.com to order your custom couture grimoire. And stop by my website for tarot and numerology readings, as well as custom candles. And now, on to the show.
What if you could have a living book that held all of your most precious spells and secrets? Well, you can. The Witch's Grimoire isn't just any old book made of paper and words. It's a living, breathing entity, a friend to the witch, a familiar spirit. In this magical episode, we scour the pages of history in search of the most powerful grimoires, learn the importance of magical record keeping, and how to craft your own enchanted tome. So grab your cuppa, your pen and paper, and settle in. All right.
What's up? What's up?
So I had a problem with the Zoom thumbnail being where I needed to scroll down on the script.
Oh, nice. That's always good.
Mercury retrograde. Anyway.
It's almost over.
Yeah. Or just user error on my part. But anyway.
I say almost over. Aren't we like halfway through?
Halfway, yeah. Yeah, just about, yeah. A little over, maybe. I don't know. Halfway. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay. So did you keep a journal or a diary as a kid?
Yeah. Yeah. How about you?
Oh, yeah. I'm a child of divorce. Yes. Yes, I did.
Exactly. I still have one of my composition poetry books from high school, and it is very emo.
So did you always write in composition books, or did you have other diaries with locks and things like that?
Yeah, I think I had like a fancy diary one time with a lock. And then do you remember there was like an electronic diary at one point?
Oh, yeah.
And that was like all the rage. I don't think I had one, but I was one of one. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, like that was the pinnacle of diaries. But I always just wrote in composition books.
Yeah, same here. I had a lot of those.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
They were cheap,
actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Right on.
So our obsession started early.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've always loved writing just in general. So the obsession started at a young age. Oh, when I was in third grade, I won an award for writing a story
about,
I swear.
No, because so did I. Same grade.
Well, tell me if your story was like mine, and that would be really weird. So the story was that we were forced to go to a boarding school where we had to dress up like clowns and eat cold oatmeal.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. I would have never written a story about clowns unless it was a horror story.
True.
No, I had to write a fable. That's all I remember about it.
Oh, okay.
I had to write a fable and it was about a dad and three sons. I remember that, but I don't remember the details of the story, but I do remember that it was made into a little book and it was laminated and everything. And
then they
had like a parent night or whatever, where they put them all on display, and mine was like first place. And I was like, yay.
Oh, that's awesome. That's adorable.
That's so funny though. Third grade. I was actually telling my husband last night that third grade was pretty much when I really got into reading.
Same here.
Like I had been reading since the age of four, but like third grade was when I started chapter books.
I was going to say I was reading like whole series. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And now I think, and now, like kids coming up now, I just, it amazes me that, you know, third grade, they're still reading Dr. Seuss.
Well, I think that depends on the kid, but I hear you. Yeah.
Mm. You, I mean, like the whole, like the vast majority. Yeah. Like I was reading James and the Giant Peach and Charlotte's Web.
I Chronicles of Narnia in third grade.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So magical books.
Yes. Books are magical.
They are. And everyone should keep their own magical book, AKA the grimoire, AKA Book of Shadows, right?
Right. So, okay. So let's talk about the history of grimoires. So what exactly is a grimoire for everybody listening who may not know, and how does it differ from a Book of Shadows? If it differs.
Yeah. So there's a couple different schools of thought on that, but basically a grimoire is a book of magic, put simply, and can truly contain anything you want it to. The term is actually close in origin or etymology of the word grammar. So it actually originally once meant a book, but became used specifically when it comes to, you know, magic books or books of magic.
Right.
As far as the difference between a Book of Shadows and a grimoire, often the terms are used interchangeably depending on the person and the tradition, I think. But the real difference is that the Book of Shadows term was invented or made popular by Gerald Gardner, the founder of Wicca, in the early 20th century. The Book of Shadows basically means keeping your spells and recipes and things hidden from others, so hidden in the shadows. But to me, my personal opinion is that you can call it what you want. You could also call it your magic book, your book of magic, your spell book, your book of spells. I mean, I don't really think, for me, the terminology doesn't really matter.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't matter for me either.
I'm sure people would disagree with that, but that's okay.
I think just because I like the way that it sounds, I prefer grimoire.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
100%. It just sounds more magical.
Magical. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yep. Okay, so let's talk about what the first grimoires would have looked like, because just hot take, it wasn't pen and paper.
No. So people have been writing or basically etching in other materials for numerous reasons for thousands of years. One was to preserve a memory or knowledge and stories of their people, taken up like real far back. Another was for ritual purposes. So they would record prayers, incantations to gods and spirits. They would also record medicinal, what were actually magical medicinal remedies as well. Basically, though, before paper and pen, they were using things like stone slabs or stone tablets. And like I said, they would etch or carve into the stone. That's basically what we know of the first earliest written magic.
I need to interrupt you here.
Mm-hmm.
So in saying this,
mm-hmm.
and this might ruffle some feathers to people who have stumbled upon this podcast who are not pagan, but now that you're saying stone slabs, wasn't the Ten Commandments on a stone slab saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I have always said the Bible is a great book of magic.
Yes.
Like, if you can look past dogma, Psalms, it's fabulous.
Yes.
Okay, continue.
It's weird that you bring this up because I just started reading the New Testament again for my own personal education.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I agree with you though, 100%. But there's so many of the books that were left out of the Bible too.
Oh, yes, I know. Growing up Catholic, we had 7 extra books
mm-hmm.
in the Bible. So, but anyway,
well, in addition to that, there's all the Gnostic Gospels that were purposely left out of the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Gospel of Mary, the Gospel of Thomas. I forget the other ones. There's a bunch.
Like I said, it's an excellent book of magic if you know where to look.
Agreed.
Okay.
Continue. 100%.
That's my little 2 cents for the day.
No, I agree with you. So, and in saying that, if I haven't said this already, the grimoire or even the tradition of magic does not discriminate when it comes to religion.
Right. Exactly.
Magic permeates every religion. It's a part of every culture, right? So the grimoire itself is not one religion or another. It could be anything.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the Torah, there's a long history of Jewish mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's magic in every religion.
So, as far as the earliest written magic that we know of, Sumerian cuneiform clay tablets.
Mm.
So on these tablets, we know there, because of these tablets, we know that there were physician magicians thousands upon thousands of years ago, and also exorcists. They actually wrote rituals on these clay tablets that consisted of protection from ghosts and demons, and also from people that might be casting malefic magic at the time.
Right.
What we would call witches many thousands of years later on, right? So that's all very interesting.
Hmm. Well, I mean, and the history of medicine as well was very magical for a long time. Like even up until the early modern era, I'd say they were still believing in humors.
Right. And a lot of people believe that spirits caused disease, right?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is a whole nother subject on that, mm-hmm. but just saying, mm-hmm. like, this has a very long history.
Yeah, agreed. Medicine was intertwined with magic.
Oh, yeah. And to some extent, it still is today.
I was going to say that. You beat me to it.
That's so funny.
Okay, so another part to the history of grimoires. There's a book called The Art of the Grimoire by Owen Davies, and it's actually, I believe, edited or published by Yale.
Mm.
I can't remember which, but it's a beautiful book that I picked up that shows all of these different examples of ancient magical texts and tablets. And there's actually, like what you were talking about, the Jewish mystic, like pottery where they're drawing like spirits on and things. It's really interesting. If anyone's into this topic, I recommend that book. But also a big part of this is curse tablets. So these were where people wrote or, you know, etched on slabs of lead, and they were super popular during Roman times. They're called the defictiones. They were thinner sheets that were easier to transport and work with than, you know, the heavy stone tablets of the Sumerian times, I guess. So at this point, we see like kind of an evolution with writing starting to happen.
I'm just laughing because I'm thinking to myself, this would be the equivalent of an ancient Kindle, easily transportable to fit in your pocket.
Right. What gets me about these curse tablets, though, is that it still took a lot of effort to write, you know, to etch out these curses on these slabs, right? So I'm like, wow, you really had to hate somebody to be writing, not taking the time to etch all this out onto lead, you know?
Yeah, you had to be dedicated like, to the cause.
Really dedicated. And then, so they were often inscribed with curses that were against thieves and other people, like other enemies of whoever was writing them. And then they were thrown into Roman baths, or they could also be buried in tombs or in grave sites.
Hmm.
Yeah. So the idea there was the ones that were thrown into the Roman baths, they were likely sort of thrown in there as a prayer to whatever god or goddess, you know, whoever's domain that was at that specific bathhouse or, you know, thermal spring. And as far as like burying it at a gravesite or a tomb, they were trying to either summon someone from the underworld to carry out this curse, or, you know, or like symbolically putting it into the other world, if that makes sense.
I was just going to ask these baths, if it was like a natural spring.
Yes.
I wonder.
There's one in England literally called Bath. The town's called Bath, England. And it was named that for a natural spring that was there. And they actually found some of these curse tablets in that Roman bathhouse that had been there.
Okay. I was just curious because I was thinking to myself, I wonder if they had sulfur in them and if it ate the thin iron sheet.
Oh, I don't know about that. I'm not sure. I know that they believed that they had, you know, these springs or whatever had a lot of healing abilities.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And then, yeah, then we see, you know, there's a lot of magical writing and rituals drawn and painted and etched onto things like pottery and walls of tombs and temples and things like that.
Which then evolves into a form of paper.
Have you ever seen, there was a whole documentary on Discovery where there's these archaeologists in Egypt that recently found, it's something called the Waziri papyrus. It was pretty awesome because in the documentary, they show the archaeology, the lead archaeologist and his team descending into this passageway that they'd found in the Valley of the Kings. I don't remember the name of it. And they find like a tube and they're like, is this papyrus? And they all like freak out because it's pretty hard to come by to find a perfectly preserved papyrus roll, right? That's thousands of years old.
Right.
So anyway, this, I also recommend people look this up because it's pretty cool. It is one of the longest and most important works from the Ptolemaic period of Egypt and contains hundreds of chapters of the Book of the Dead.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like 30 or 50 feet long or something crazy.
I just got chills.
Ugh. I know. It was pretty awesome when they found it. Like, even my son was like, that's so cool. So
I can see him being like that. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So then after the papyrus, at some point, I think people started using, we came up with parchment. And then the parchment eventually led to paper.
I should do.
Yeah. I mean, not that quickly, you know, but over centuries.
Yeah. Because then when we get in the medieval era, we start seeing illuminated manuscripts.
Yes.
Which.
Yeah, that's. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say of illuminated manuscripts was like years long.
Oh, some of the monks that created them worked on them for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is pretty awesome when you think about if you have your own grimoire, it is something that you should work on and use your whole life.
Yes.
Yes. You know, I mean, I have a bunch of little ones that are just journals and things, but if you have a main, massive, supreme grimoire, that is something that you could add to and work on your entire life.
And what, for anybody listening who may not know what an illuminated manuscript is, it's basically a book with hand-drawn, colored illustrations, all kinds. Yes. And the books are really big.
Mm-hmm.
Most
a good example of one is the Book of Kells.
Hmm.
which has all kinds of really cool folklore around it. And there's a movie actually made called The Secret of Kells. Have you seen that?
I don't know.
Oh, please, you need to see that. It's so good. It's a cartoon, it's animated, but it's just a really cool look into that time period when the Book of Kells is made. And, you know, it's a Christian time period, but it's also the age of the Vikings. So they're showing the Vikings like raiding the monasteries, and it's really interesting. But it's all about how that book was created and then how they tried to protect it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So tell us about some of the famous grimoires from medieval times.
So yeah, when we think of the grimoire, most of us might picture the medieval style where there's these huge books, like what we're saying, with beautiful cursive letters and beautiful illustrations of angels and even devils and herbs. But some of the famous ones from the medieval times include the Picatrix.
That's the one I always think of.
Mm-hmm. Hildegard von Bingen, who was actually canonized. She's a saint now, I believe, in Germany. She was a nun and an abbess. She wrote a couple of different grimoires, but her most famous one's called the Physica. And there's also a grimoire from Iceland called the Galdrabók, which is pretty popular among like Norse pagans and heathens.
Yeah. I've heard of that one too.
Yeah. In addition, we have the Grand Albert and the Petite Albert.
Why? Because I'm telling you what I'm thinking about when I hear that. And
I know, me too.
Not a book.
I thought that too. I'm like, I got to talk about this though, because it's funny. So the Grand Albert was a grimoire that was written in the mid 1200s and finished in the 1300s with the translation in French in the year 1500. It's attributed to Albertus Magnus, so it's named for him, aka Saint Albert the Great, who was a friar, a scientist, a bishop, a philosopher, and the list goes on. The book itself is supposed to contain Albert's secrets on the powers of stones, herbs, and even some animals as far as using them for healing and magical purposes. So, yeah, so I pulled this from Wikipedia. Yes, I'm quoting Wikipedia. The book contained instructions on how to summon spirits, demons, and other supernatural beings, as well as spells and incantations for various purposes such as healing, protection, and love. It also recommends herbal remedies and potions for common ailments, such as the use of theriac, a concoction made of serpent's flesh and opium, as a remedy for animal poisons. I'm like, I need to read this. Yeah.
All I'm thinking is, I don't think that's a remedy, but it would definitely put the person in a different world.
Agreed.
They wouldn't know what was going on.
For sure. Yes. However, the use of folk cures and occult rituals, like the ones in the Grand Albert, was actually much more common with peasants at the time. So those who had access to like the mainstream medical care at that time tended to avoid these practices as they were often viewed as superstitious and ineffective. And there was a stigma attached to reading grimoires like the Grand Albert. You weren't supposed to do that back then, apparently.
Well, which is hilarious because, again, magic and medicine went hand in hand. Though the mainstream medical service was probably, talking about
like a guy with like a jacket and an alley, like, hold on, I may have something in the back here.
But I mean, it's just a different person with different occult remedies. Just what it was.
Absolutely. So continuing on about the Grand and Petite Albert, the Grand Albert's popularity was also partly due to its reputation for granting spiritual powers to its readers. Some people actually believe that if you read the book, it could result in possession, while others saw it as a means of gaining supernatural powers.
Like what?
supernatural abilities. I don't know. I haven't read The Grand Albert, but maybe I need to.
I know. If it gives you the ability to teleport, do it.
I find it interesting too. Yeah, that it was the mainstream religious authorities who were saying that this could be potentially dangerous and it was heretical and all this. It's like, was it really, or are y'all just trying to hide all the powers that be, you know?
Right. We want to fly too.
Take it for themselves. All right. So the petite Albert, meaning the smaller Albert, is often mentioned in conjunction with the Grand Albert. However, they're supposedly separate works and written by two different Alberts.
Okay, then.
I know. The Petite Albert was written supposedly by Albert of Saxony, who was a German philosopher and mathematician in the 1300s. But apparently there was some confusion, and there still is, about whether Albert the Great contributed to this grimoire or not. So this lesser Albert, or Petite Albert, contains love and sex spells, tips and tricks for a better harvest, recipes for cooking, because, you know, that just thrown in there. I mean, typical grimoire nowadays, and household and hygiene products, and how to make a hand of glory.
What? Wait, stop. What's a hand of glory?
Oh, you don't know what a hand of glory is?
Mm-mm.
For real? Ooh, we needed a whole episode on that, because it could literally be a whole episode. So the hand of glory was a candle made from a dead man's hand. Mm-hmm. And it was used popularly, supposedly, this is the history behind it, by thieves, because if you took it into wherever you were about to rob, it would render the victim paralyzed. And I'm like, yeah, I guess, because they'd be scared shitless, right?
No kidding. But so I have seen that. I've heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know it was called the Hand of Glory. Like, that was new for me. But also, we were talking about the Great Albert and the Little Albert, and then we have the Hand of Glory. I mean, come on. That's why I needed
Prince Albert in there somewhere.
Okay.
So, Hand of Glory, though, if anybody wants to learn more about that, we have an article on witchescabinet.com on the Hand of Glory.
And I'll
put it in the info box too.
Cool.
Yeah. So then we could also talk about the Greater and Lesser Keys of Solomon, but we're not going to, because I think most people have heard of those and you can find a lot of information on those online.
Yes.
And there's also the Munich Manual of Demonic Magic, which sounds crazy.
Mm.
The Book of Abramelin the Mage. Hopefully I said that right. The Emerald Tablets of Hermes Trismegistus, and there's many, many more I could list, but we would be here all day.
Is that how you say that?
Trismegistus?
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. I've pronounced it different, but I have no idea how it's pronounced. So I was like, ooh, do you know how to pronounce this? Trismegistus.
Well, listen, what I do with all these words is I just fake it until I make it. If I don't know, I try to act like I do, because, you know. Okay. So in more recent years, so fast forward past the medieval times, what old grimoires can we access? I tend to say, if you want to go for more of a grandma folk remedy, recipes, that kind of thing, 2 to 3 centuries ago, you can actually find cookbooks and remedy books online. There's an online archive actually that's free here in the US that I've used for a number of things. That's pretty interesting, because you can literally read through someone's recipe book from the 1800s, and a lot of them have old recipes. Like, I found one with Florida water.
Ooh, neat.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. So I think they're not going to be called grimoires, right? But it just depends on what you look at and view as magic too.
What is the name of that archive, if you don't mind sharing?
I'll pull it up right now. I have it Hold on.
I have it bookmarked.
I do. Okay.
I know you do.
It is on actually nyu.edu. You would look up, you can just look up early American cookbooks, nyu.edu.
So NYU has them.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yep. And it's a huge collection. I mean, they have a collection here. Okay. 1,450 cookbooks.
That's a lot.
Published in the US between 1800 and 1920. But I would actually tell you that there are some from the late 1700s that I've even found in there.
I wonder if other universities have something similar, like in different parts of the country.
That'd be pretty awesome. I mean, well, this is from all over the country though. So you're getting cookbooks from different libraries, huh? Oh, it's called the Haffey Trust Digital Library. I can put this in the info box too for folks.
Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, so where else can we look?
In addition to that, you can look up actual books of shadows written by 20th century Wiccans and witches like Doreen Valiente or Gerald Gardner. Mm. You can find those on Sacred Texts for free.
Yeah, Sacred Texts is a really cool site.
How many times have you and I used that? I'm sure over the
a
years.
A million. And I took a class in university that was science, magic, and religion in the medieval era.
Mm-hmm.
And I used it every day in that class.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, cool we class. Did. Oh, it was a cool class because we role played the trial of Galileo.
Oh.
So we each were ascribed a role.
Yeah.
And I was a cardinal.
That's cool.
So you had to access actual documents from the trial of Galileo and, you know,
right.
Bible pages and all this stuff. So yeah, it was really fun.
That is cool. I like that. Sounds fun.
Okay. So the importance of record keeping and personal tradition.
So in building your own grimoire and keeping your own grimoire, adding to it over the years, you're not just keeping a record of what you've done, you're actually building your own personal tradition.
Right.
So if we don't do that, we don't record our own, you know, recipes, spells, rituals, experiences, dreams, all those things, then all of those things die with you. I mean, it's sad to say, but
right.
That's what happens. So I'm very passionate about telling people to write this stuff down. Even if you don't have a big elaborate grimoire, like what we said before, your composition book.
Right.
You can get those at the dollar store, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I just think it's really important. And I wish more people would do it and keep it sacred, keep it, you know, be more religious about it, I guess you could say.
And you know what? It's funny. There's even a third term for your personal experiences in performing magic, or it's basically known as a mirror book.
Oh, yes. I've heard that term. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you are thinking, oh, but that's not really a grimoire when we're talking about composition books.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But I mean, if that's your mindset, it most certainly can be a book of mirrors, which is your personal experiences. It's basically a witch's diary, if you will.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I like that. I think if you want to keep that separate from your actual, you know, spells and recipes, that makes sense.
Mm.
For me, I kind of,
oh no, I put it all together.
I kind of just put everything together. Yeah. I'm not even going to lie to you guys. I sometimes have like grocery lists and to-do lists in my grimoire that I'm keeping right now. But I have a big one that I'm working on for myself.
Hmm.
But I also have like a million other journals that I use as grimoires too for like day-to-day record keeping, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of a problem though, because every time I go to the bookstore and I find a pretty journal, I buy it.
Don't go to Barnes and Noble.
Oh, that's what I mean.
Stay away.
I think I brought three home the last time that I went there, and I haven't even written in them yet. So I just started using them as notebooks. You know, I'm just writing anything that I feel like I want to write in them, which includes grocery lists and research for podcasts, you know, just anything. But I think it's kind of cool, you know, like if someone ever found my journal in the future or my note, one of these grimoires that I'm keeping separate, they'd be like, this is odd. Why is it talking about the hand of glory on one page? And then the next page, it's like, need a jar of pickles from the store.
Funny.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess we should talk about how to start crafting your own tome, right?
Yes. And before we get into that, when we were just talking about whether the grimoire should be secret to the witch or passed down, you have started hand making grimoires.
Right.
Right. Which I now own one.
Yes. Yay.
It's gorgeous. It's fabulous. It's well made, well crafted. You can definitely tell that you took your time and it is spectacular. But I would say the grimoire that you made for me, that is something that I will pass down. Like that to me,
I hope so.
Is an ancestral type grimoire.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome to hear you say that. That's the goal with what I'm doing with the grimoires that I'm making, because I do want it to be something that lasts longer than, hopefully, than a lifetime. And, you know, with the paper books that we have nowadays, they fall apart, you know?
Right. And with
covers.
For anybody out there who's interested in purchasing one of your grimoires, so Kitty here, she customizes everything to what you want. So you get to pick the fabric, you get to pick the outside, you get to tell her different things that you'd like in it. And you even customize the content based on where somebody is. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Like you can put that in there. Yeah.
I can. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's just amazing and magnificent. And it's also made out of wood. It's not a regular book. It's like book from Hocus Pocus. Okay.
Yes.
They're alive.
It's made of wood and either faux leather or real leather, depending on what you want, as well as cotton. And the great part about it is that you can remove and add pages as well.
I know. It's so great.
So it's not as simple as a 3-ring binder that you can pop open, but it's still, you can make it what you want, basically.
Exactly. And you even do like the custom sizing and stuff. So if somebody wants like a really ginormous one, you can do that. And if somebody wants a smaller one, you can do that.
I can. I haven't gotten to that level yet. That would probably take a little more, just some tweaking on my end. But yeah.
Well, in saying that, mine's pretty freaking huge.
Yeah.
Like it took two hands and some leverage to pull it out of the box.
I know. Yeah,
but
they're not
it.
Small.
Okay.
They're pretty large.
But if you want to craft your own and forego Kitty's gorgeous work.
Yeah, so how I first started this actually was that I have an ancient ancestor that I've been working with. The only one that I've ever worked with, honestly, that came forward, and she was what they call a spell weaver. She was a scribe. She would write the spells and rituals for her coven down. And so she kind of has been pushing me to do this work. And so if you want to tap into some kind of ancestral guide, or, you know, muse energy, then you can always ask your ancestors, one of them, to come forward and help guide you through the process.
Cool.
Yeah. Next, though, there's different ways to make your grimoire. Obviously, we said you can just use a composition or spiral notebook. I mean, that's worked for me for many years. Journals and diaries that you buy from Barnes and Noble, even. A three-ring binder with sheet protectors. We've talked about those in the past.
Yeah, if you're a Virgo, that's your go-to.
Yeah, and those are great for like kitchen-type witchcraft, too, because with recipes, most people want to preserve them. And if you're using them a lot in the kitchen, the paper might get stained. So something to consider there. You can also do junk journal style. And if nobody knows what that is, it's like you're upcycling using junk. Basically, you can use any kind of scrap paper, boxes. I used a cake box and made it into a little fairy spell book. And all I did was like print out some paper, you know, some pretty paper, some pretty pictures from online. And then I used lace scraps to bind it all together.
Very cool.
It allows you to be super creative. And like I said, if you can't afford much, you can literally make these books out of anything. It just takes a little bit of time and practice and trial and error.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then, you know, moving forward, once you have your grimoire made, then you think about what content you want to put in it. For me, I'm just putting literally everything that I want to in it, which could include, like I said, grocery lists. No, I'm not going to put that in my main one, but spells and rituals, your Sabbath information, your full moon information. Something that I think is really important is your familial traditions for holidays. Your heirloom recipes, any recipes that you got from your grandmother, your mom, superstitions and old wives' tales from your families are important too.
Yeah, that's definitely the most cherished thing, I would think, definitely. In a grimoire.
Mm-hmm. So if you still have some old folks that are alive in your family, you should be asking them those questions if you don't know your family stories or superstitions and whatnot. And then obviously info on tools like your besom, your cauldron, your wand. You want to keep info on herbs, crystals. If you're into tarot, any form of divination, signs and omens, dreams. I mean, we could go on and on about all this, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, also too, you can have all this typed and printed out. You can handwrite it. You can pull things out of other books and magazines, like for a junk journal type style, and so much more. The options are limitless.
The options are limitless.
The limit does not exist.
Hey, I do have a question about your grimoires that you're making.
Yeah. Okay.
I know that you said that you're going to have a couple different styles in stock.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have those up?
No.
In your marketplace?
Mm-mm. The only one I have right now is the Practical Magic style, the trifold with the two books in one.
Got ya. But
the one I'm working on right now is going to be the second style, which is just, it's not the two books in one. It's just one large grimoire.
Right. Got ya. Mm-hmm. But the point in saying that is if you are not into the Practical Magic style grimoire, keep looking on Otherworldly Marketplace because Kitty is going to stock a couple of different styles. She just hasn't gotten there yet.
Yeah, and I'm also planning on making a smaller, I think it's A4 size, or maybe it's A5. Sorry.
We use A4 paper here every day, so I know exactly what A4 is, and it's not A4.
I knew you were going to know. Yep. I knew you were going to know. It was either A4 or A5. I'm like, I think it's A4 is the larger one. So it's A5.
A5.
Mm-hmm. And I have, it's actually a leather like style that will be a ring binder for those. And those will be a little bit more affordable too.
Right. Cause they're
and
smaller.
Actually you could hide those easier if you're in the broom closet. So look out for those too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about your new adventure because it's so good. They're so good.
Thank you.
You're so gorgeous. And
I appreciate it.
You get bookmarks.
Yeah.
And they're so cool. They're just so
and
good.
You get pockets too.
And pockets. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Very
I
cool.
try to add little details that really, to me, make it more magical.
And more unique. I have never seen a grimoire with pockets.
Me neither. Except until
sets
now.
You apart. Oracles, we need your help. If you haven't had a chance yet, open your podcast app, rate and review our podcast. Every good review helps us become more visible to other oracles out there. And don't forget, whether you're in the land of the Fae or the land of the ancestors, stay otherworldly.